Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 19th. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back Greg Ward today from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. Why are we doing that? Because it's the gardening show. That's why. You have a gardening question? I saw a little tiny patch of grass in my lawn yesterday for the first time in a long time. So it's getting to be that time. If you want to talk gardening, call 800-348-2551. So what if we get another foot of snow coming up, right? Let's think optimistically. 800-348-2551. You can email your gardening question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, and Greg, your gardening calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gardeners are back. They're ready to take your calls. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward is from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, don't you know? We welcome your gardening calls right now, 800-348-2551. Couple of open lines at the moment. It'll be jammed in a moment. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And we got a stack of those we'll start with. voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Fred, Greg, and Bob. Dale Isla is in an undisclosed but fabulous location and won't be with us today. Welcome, fellas.
Hey, hey, good to be back.
Yeah. Definitely. Thanks for having us, right?
It feels almost spring-like today, doesn't it?
Yeah, this last few days is, you know, the sun's a little stronger, days are a little longer.
I mean, 38 feels really good.
Really warm.
Oh, yeah.
It did. It was up to 40 the other day.
No doubt about it.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if Greg and Bob know, but Fred's he's a bit of a celebrity now. He was in the Times Union. Did you see that?
No.
Did you see the pictures? See that.
20 things you didn't know about Fred. You guys probably know some of them, though.
Yeah.
The average person.
Well, they left a couple things out.
There's probably a lot of funny things I don't know about Fred.
It was pretty great, though. I was surprised to see it.
Yep.
And the pictures came out great. Your wife looks lovely.
Yep, she always does.
And you know, whatever. But I didn't realize you'd been to 60 dead shows.
I have, and we're talking with Jerry, not,
right.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
never talked about that. I went to a lot back in the day.
60.
Wow, yeah. If you count Jerry Garcia Band, which I do. I saw a huge run in '93 of maybe 8-9 shows alone just on Jerry Band.
Fantastic. Well, we probably shouldn't talk about that during a gardening show. And
one was front row.
Are you a big Deadhead, Bob?
I have to say no. I'm
no.
Sorry.
Were you a Lawrence Welk head?
I'm not much of a concert guy.
Okay, fair enough. Fair. Yeah. We were out in the garden, right?
You know, a little. Blood, Sweat, and Tears in Chicago, and I'm happy.
Lucretia McEvil, we'll sing that a little bit later on. What about you, Greg?
I went to 2.5 shows.
What happened with
I can't tell you about the half show.
Oh, no, say no more. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening today, and Dale Isla is not with us today. And I'm not going to say where she is, but it's
pretty spectacular.
It's pretty good. Yeah. All right. So Nick wrote in last week when Bob Berman was on for astronomy, and he had a question about hydrangeas. So I saved it, and we'll ask it now because Bob didn't have the answer. Can hydrangea be grown from cuttings like Rose of Sharon?
Yes, it can.
Yeah.
Remember last time we were talking about rooting things?
That mic a little closer there, buddy.
We were talking about rooting things and using that rooting hormone.
Yeah.
Remember? Yep. And you said, what is that kind of thing? Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
No, okay.
Yeah,
anyway.
Was I hosting?
You were here,
okay,
yes.
Okay, all right, fine.
You would do the same thing. We'd have to look, but most likely softwood cutting, so you'd be doing that in the late spring. June is a great month. Taking the tips, probably flowerless tips would be better. You don't need that big flower growing on there and sucking all the energy out of it.
Interesting.
And then you root them, in a well-drained soil mix or sand or something.
Little bit of a loaded question because there are a lot of different types of hydrangeas. Some of them are going to be a little easier to root than others.
The herbaceous ones would be probably easier.
Yeah.
The wood, you know, there are some woody ones, and they would be a little bit harder. But hydrangeas in general do root fairly easy, especially the herbaceous ones.
And all of those hydrangeas that people are thinking about today are are clones. They're all these selections they're not produced from seed annually. They're produced from cuttings.
An awful lot of the shrubs we sell now and trees are not produced from seed.
Right.
Yeah, most actually are not. They're not. Yeah, that's true.
You know, clones of one sort or another.
Yep. And a lot of times people call in and they'll say, you know, can we save our like cantaloupe seeds and reuse them in the garden? And the answer is no, because they're not going to come true. I mean, you can grow something, but it looks like a gourd. It doesn't come out like a cantaloupe.
Interesting.
But when you do clonal plants, when you start taking cuttings, they're genetically identical.
So the follow-up from Nick was, to plant hydrangea seeds, would you just put seeds, that is, would you just put the whole flower puff in the ground?
No, you're going to make cuttings.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, seeds are, they're, every plant is, has a little bit different specifics to break dormancy of a seed and get it to work. Sometimes they're tricky. Sometimes they're really, really easy. But they're all a bit different. So cuttings would be, you know, to me, way quicker. You're going to get a bigger plant faster.
You plant seeds sometimes, as you just said, you don't know what you're going to get.
You don't always know what you're going to get. So you have this really nice flowering hydrangea, but when you plant the seeds, is it going to be the exact same plant? Odds are
Shouldn't it be? Well, come on.
You think so, but they're hybrids. They're not just straight up, you know, species. They're cultivars.
The island of Dr. Moreau. It's very strange.
The flower puff thing, you know, you have to wait until the flower, you know, dries up and forms seeds, and then you plant those seeds. And as Fred said, there's probably some, little procedure, whether it's a temperature change for some period of time or some hot water or something.
Yeah, some of them require actually the seed coats actually getting scratched. not hydrangeas, but.
Bess wrote in early this morning from Albany. I've raised up off the ground wooden beds for vegetables. The soil in them has been there for several years. I test it, I amend it, but it grows moss and random weeds like crazy. Is it time to replace the soil?
For sure.
Yeah?
It's not a bad idea. No, it's, soil has a shelf life, especially if you're using it over and over and over.
You can't restore it?
You can. And, you know, ideally in perfect location.
Moss is usually an indication that there's something's off.
Yeah.
The pH is off. It's too wet. It's too shady.
Nutrients are low.
It's showing you something's wrong when you got moss.
You know, raised beds are containers.
Yep.
And you should periodically remove the soil and use new soil.
Okay.
You can amend, you can do a 50-50 thing, keep half of your old soil and half new, but either way, you want to mix that up and make it all fresh.
Yep. And it is different from in the ground. That's why a lot of times with people are like, I want to do a raised bed, and I always say, you know, what's your soil look like? Because if your soil's good, you don't ever have to replace your garden soil. You got to replenish it and fix it.
Yeah.
Add compost and add organics and add nutrition. But with a raised bed, just like what Greg said, it's like in essence a container.
It's a pot.
It's a big square pot, and now that soil doesn't behave the same.
Well, Alyssa wrote also in very early today. Alyssa from Colony, and I hope I said your name right. Maybe it's Eliza. I don't know. This is our first bug question of 26. Every year I'm undone by flea beetles, says Alyssa. I enjoy a small 15-by-25-foot beautiful bounteous vegetable garden, but several plants are magnets to these beasties. At summer's end, I strip the rows clean before planting cover crops, and I've tried the sticky paper trick. Didn't work very well. Are covers the only solution? And that's from Alyssa in Colony.
They're definitely probably the simplest organic solution. Dusting the plants with diatomaceous earth, which is, mineral product. Yeah. And then covering them is probably like a great 1-2 step. So you're putting in the plants, you're dusting them a little bit, and then you're covering them so that basically anything that's been caught in the cover will die from the dust, will dehydrate from the dust. And then the cover is keeping all those flea beetles that are on the outside from coming in.
Sometimes if you can't do that, you could use an oil or a soap spray, or as a touch-up if you see it particularly if there's plants that are worse than others.
Yeah.
You could use something safe.
Yeah, and usually a classic one is like eggplant. You put some eggplant in and the flea beetles jump on it and they just take it down to nothing. It's really, really quite depressing. So if you do the things we're talking about, you know, dust, cover, then let the eggplant get to a size. So now you've planted it in May, and now it's, say, the 1st of July, it's finally starting to flower. Usually the plant's big enough at that point to deal with any flea beetles that are left.
Right.
That they're tough enough, and then you can get some eggplant. You might still want to dust on occasion, but you'll definitely at some point want to uncover to get some pollinators in there.
Could you trick the flea beetles by, say, planting a sacrificial eggplant in another spot that you don't plan to eat and just let those guys go to it?
But that's a great segue into, if it's really terrible in that spot, pick a new spot for your eggplant or whatever it is, like a separate container by the house, like maybe 50, 100 feet away, makes a big difference.
Oh, interesting. All right. This email from Laura. I have two apple trees, a crab apple and a dogwood, that all need to be trimmed. When is it safe to do so?
So they're all a little different. The edible apples, generally speaking, late winter. Okay. Early spring.
So soon.
Soon.
Today.
March.
Today's good.
I mean, you could do it. Yeah, you could do it in February. You could do it
as soon as
March.
You get some decent weather. Even now, you could do it if you wanted to.
And the reason for that is that flowers on apples, the new growth basically occurs and then they produce a flower. So you want to prune those kind of plants prior to growth. And then crab apples tend to be what we call somewhat canker prone. So generally speaking, I prune most of the crab apples in summer. And summer is a safe time to prune apples as well.
Okay.
It's just that if you're pruning apples in summer, you're taking away fruit.
Apples.
And a lot of orchards that are growing new trees, and I don't think they said whether they're new or old, but if they're new and they're training structure, then a lot of the orchards will actually prune late winter, early spring, and then prune again, touch up pruning in summer. And the dogwood can also be summer pruned. You know, I tend to do them mid-June.
All right. Well, listen, this is going to be quite a season on the show. You wanted to add something, Greg?
No, I didn't.
This is going to be a bumper crop here on the show, I can tell, because we've already got a stack of emails. The phone lines are loaded up. This is going to be a big year. So let's all try to stick around long enough to stick it through this year, okay?
It's a deal.
We got it. That's a deal.
What are you saying?
Well, listen, Bob, I don't know.
I'm not that old.
800-348-2551 is the number. It's about time we hit the phones, and we'll do so right after a little prog rock. Here's some King Crimson. The King Crimson. There's Red here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. They did some shows at the Egg in Albany, maybe 2017, and then they did it right up to the end of their touring days. Ooh, they were good. It's the gardening show today, and let's start in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Carrie, you're up. Go.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. What I'm calling about today is I'm going to do a little experimental gardening this coming up season. I'm going to be building a 24-by-8-foot raised bed. And what I want to plant in this bed is what the early American Indians called the Three Sisters, where you plant corn, pole, beans, and squash. And I was wondering, you know, when I plant the corn and when it matures, I hope that the pole beans climb up the stalks of that corn. And then I'm going to plant the squash, of course, on the ground. I have two questions. Should I plant winter or summer squash, if you're familiar with that kind of planting? And how well will a squash grow with limited sunshine without a foliage above it?
Yeah, they won't.
Yeah, the second question is definitely an answer. The first question is winter squash, something that's going to mature late and vine.
And you could do both. Mm-hmm. You could do summer squash, too.
Yeah.
A big enough space.
Summer squash tends to be shrub-like or,
more contained.
Yeah, it doesn't spread. So, having it run would be the better way to do it.
But if it's shady, don't grow vegetables. Move it somewhere because you're not going to do well in the shade.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's what I'm wondering, but everything I read about it, that's what they're doing. It's like, I got to find out, from you guys
The corn in the center and the lower, the squash on the outside and then the beans, near the corn, as you said, because you need some kind of support system. You could separate that from the corn. You don't have to, be 100% accurate and create a separate trellis system.
Yep. There's the site. Just curious, site-wise, are you, we're talking full sun site? The site itself?
Yes, full sun. sun.
Yeah, because
okay, so he's worried about the shade of the of what he's going to plant.
That's what I was thinking. So
I was afraid there was a tree shading.
No, so the corn won't throw.
No, not trees.
Okay. Yeah, so the corn won't throw enough shade.
Corn and the beans.
Right. Yeah, you'd be okay. That was what I wanted to clarify, just because if it's you're going to everything, all three of those, you're going to want full sun. The other thing I would add, or at least question propose before you do it, is we just talked about raised beds. There's advantages to raised beds. There's disadvantages to raised beds. But if you have good soil and you don't need to kind of raise it up for a specific reason, I sometimes would advocate questioning doing the raised bed. Because if you have decent soil, amending that soil and you never have to replenish it, and you're talking about something that's 20-something feet.
That's a lot of soil.
That's a lot of soil you're going to need. So if you have decent soil, you can improve that soil. And you might need to not, you know, it might save you a lot of time and also maybe even get you a better result. And it'd be, you know, like I said, easier as well. And I think you'd end up growing something really quite nice in it. If you have really bad soil, there was one apartment years ago that my wife lived and I lived in, and it was like the worst subsoil I ever seen in my life. And it was like, there was a reason for a raised bed. It's like, you couldn't, I mean, we tried, there was no way to amend that. It was like rock and clay. But if you have decent soil, think twice before you have to commit to that.
Well, Kerry, thanks for that one. 800-348-2551 is our number. Let's go to Ellen in Troy. Hello, Ellen in Troy.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. I thought maybe one of these shows would be on, Ray, and then I could ask my question.
Well,
I never seem to huh?
No, that's lucky you, right?
Oh, yeah, like really lucky me.
Okay.
Okay, so I collected ginkgo seed, and I did this last year and gave up immediately because it said, I don't know if it's too late to get intelligence. You have to gather, I have a paper and I found that too, gather the female ginkgo trees, the seeds, in late fall. Well, I just saw it on the street, picked them up. It's not like the seeds are wearing a bra.
That's true. I mean, if they are, you've got a problem. Yeah, okay.
So I have them. I didn't proceed to do anything. They're really smelly. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yep, they are very smelly. And some people, when they touch the fleshy skin, they can cause some reactions. I personally am speaking from experience with that. I've got some rash on the hands picking up ginkgo seeds.
The sexes are different on that tree, so you get a female tree and a male tree.
Yep. So only
I don't remember having a reaction, but this is the basis of my question.
Okay.
I have them. I printed something out last year. The library didn't do a blessed thing about the whole thing, and because I stopped at the word "go female," I was like, "What?"
Okay.
So my question is, I have the seeds. I didn't proceed to soak them, bring it down to the seeds, all the instructions here. Is there any way I could look in my little magic cup here and figure out if I have the right sex?
Okay.
It's not that hard.
Okay. Greg is going to help you, Ellen. Stand by for information.
So, it's really easy. Because you picked the fruit and because it's smelly, that is the fruit that has seeds in it, you then took the seeds out. There are no male seeds. They are simply male pollen, which would not be anywhere available for you to pick up at this point.
Aha.
So you're all set with the right seeds. Just read that paper in terms of whether you need to stratify them, make them, you know, keep them at a certain temperature for a certain length of time, and whether or not you need to sort of do something to react to the shell of the seeds, that scalding them or scarifying them to help them germinate. You may not need to do any of those things, but just read about that to confirm it, and then I think you can put them in a pot and start them up.
Splendid. Ellen, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today. Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward. And let's see, we'll go to Saratoga. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Because of all the snow, and I think the rabbits don't have anything to eat, I just went out in my backyard, and they have destroyed the bottoms of my arborvitaes, like almost 18 inches off the ground. They must be standing on their hind legs. And I'm asking, is that going to come back? Because they're a pretty, they're an awful eyesore right now.
Well, when you said destroy, did they eat the trunk and the bark off the trunk or just the foliage?
No, not the trunk, but they've eaten every piece of green off it. So
are you sure it's a rabbit? Because it sounds like a deer.
I was actually going to say the same thing.
No, it's only 18 inches off the ground. I've seen the rabbit. I see all the rabbit poop around it.
Ah,
okay. Okay.
Evidence.
Because usually it's deer that are eating arborvitae.
So, yeah. So
right.
if
my
it's...
neighbor has one, but that one you can tell because he's eating 4 foot off the ground.
Yeah. Right.
I found a great way to deter. Yep. I found a great, easy way to deter that.
Right. Yep.
But the rabbits also chewed off all the bark, maybe 6 inches of my dogwood.
Oh, boy.
And I'm wondering,
doing
something to save it?
With the arborvitae, they've eaten 18 inches.
Yep.
The arborvitae are, 5 or 6 feet tall right now?
Oh, no, my arborvitaes are probably 12 feet tall.
Yeah, so
okay.
The branches above the 18 inches are going to slowly kind of cover that bottom part up anyway. And so I don't think that's going to be a long-term issue. But the debarked...
Dogwood. Yeah, that's a problem.
That is a problem. If they've eaten all the way around it and they've gone into what's looking pretty white, then they've probably damaged the cambium, and that tree will try to leaf out. And
the only living tissue on that is the outer bark that they've eaten. So if they've eaten all of that, basically the plumbing is gone.
Oh, right.
They can't transmit any fluid.
Yep.
But I would wait because I've seen ones where I thought it was dead.
Me too.
And I've seen it come back, and I was surprised.
Me too, because they didn't go deep enough.
Wait. Right?
They hit it, but they didn't go deep enough to sever all the
plumbing. Get something around it now. Tar paper, wire, spray some repellent, put something on it because they're going to come back.
Yeah, those evil rodents don't stop. I got to tell you something, Lynn. It's pretty horrible.
Yep, and there's a good chance.
I know.
There's a good chance that.
Is it silly for me to think I can wrap that dogwood trunk in aluminum foil?
I don't think it's, out of the question. There's other things that would probably be better.
Yeah, it'd be better to use some kind of like fencing, page wire,
something that's
hardware
porous.
Cloth that's sturdy and will easily support itself once you wrap it around the tree for the rest of the winter.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. You ideally want something that's not going to hold a bunch of moisture.
Moisture. Yeah.
So like the aluminum, once the moisture is going to get behind it, and now it's staying constant to the trunk.
Oh,
and
yes.
Trunks are designed to get wet, but not stay wet. They're designed to dry out. So that would be one.
I can wrap it in chicken wire or something.
Like that. Yeah. Yep. Wire. And then the other thing I would I'll just mention is that in the spring, most likely it will leaf out, especially if it was healthy last year, looking quite good.
Yeah.
And you're going to be, you very well might be like, wow, I made it. But that's not the made it point. It's got to actually stay looking good. So first step is, I almost guarantee you, it'll leaf out and look halfway decent.
All right.
Question is, will it stay there? And then when you see it, sort of looking worse, if it's had enough damage, wait. Like Bob said, don't do anything yet, because although it might all die, only part of it might die, and you might be able to reprune it.
Okay.
Sort of bring it back into health,
which
I've done over the years.
I mean, even if it looks good, Lynn, you have reason to be pensive for a good long time in this coming season.
I just say, as a broad, general thing, that there's rabbits out there, deer out there eating things right now, just as we were discussing.
Yeah, big
and
time.
It's not too late to protect them in some way.
Okay.
I'm going to spray some more repellent now when it's warm out because I saw the deer. I sprayed repellent. They left the stuff alone.
Yeah.
When we got this heavy snow this last few weeks, they came back up and checked it. They go around everything that I sprayed and say, no, it doesn't taste good now.
Not yet.
But we're going to come back later and check it again.
We'll check it
Do you
again.
Make your own?
Good point.
Oh, you get a discount, don't you? never mind. Let's see. Let's go to Peter in West Stockbridge. Peter, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. I put 24 buckets out on the sugar maples on Maple Street last year, and I usually do it around President's Day. But I'm not that excited about getting out there with my snowshoes and tapping trees, and I'm wondering when you would recommend is a good time to tap this year.
Yeah, when you start getting cooler, evenings and warmer days, that's when the sap starts to run.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with that, Peter, but I think that the weather we're having now, these 35, 40 degree days with freezing nights is what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
That said, looks like we're going to have a lot of those, so I don't think you have to start right away. But I'm not sure when the snow will really leave either. So sometime in the next week or 2 weeks, I think you might want to start.
I am starting to see maple producers, checking lines.
When I was a kid, we used to tap them and we'd get the sap. We brought it inside and boil it on the stove.
Yeah.
We didn't do that for too long because it took all the wallpaper off the walls.
Yeah.
The amount of water that came off of that sap.
Absolutely, yeah. We used to make it as well, my brother and I.
And then we started doing it outside.
We did it outside, though, and then finished it inside.
Yeah.
Do like 80% outside.
Our number here is 800. Go ahead, Peter. Finish it up.
I've always done it outside.
Yeah.
And last year, I'd recommend to small operations like mine, buy a little, they come in a bucket now, reverse osmosis machines.
Yeah.
And it takes half the water out.
Yep.
It's a huge time saver.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Hey, have a good one. Good luck. Yep. 800-348-2551. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Bob Graves from Fadigan's Nursery, and Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum join us on this bumper crop edition of the gardening show. We're back on sort of a regular schedule now, so we'll be back next month, right?
Yep,
I believe so.
Okay, and then eventually, I know I booked the shows and I should know, but eventually we go twice a month,
correct?
Right?
Yep.
I think you start next month.
I think you're right. I think it does start next month.
All right, let's see. We'll go now to our buddy Joan is in Schenectady. I've been waiting for Joan's call. Joan, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen all.
Hello.
I was trying to resist and leave the lines open for others.
Right.
And, no, sorry.
Okay.
I'm just not that
You're
selfless.
In. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Here's a follow-up question. It will be quick. Y'all helped me take care of my container-planted perennials last year. I put them underneath the ground a little bit, covered them up a little bit. And they're now still wearing a nice blanket of snow. How soon can I dig them up and get them going? I'm so impatient.
Not yet.
I would wait till the ground sort of becomes workable and the snow is gone.
You're probably looking at the end of March, beginning of April at least.
More likely early April.
Before they, you don't need to move any of them until they wake up a little bit.
So that's what I was going to say.
Plenty of time.
Yep.
You're not going to speed things up by taking them out now.
You'll slow it down. Yep. So the plants will sort of tell you when they're ready, and you're going to start to see action. And when you see action, things are moving, and it's time for you to take action.
All right.
So go by the look of it. I got it. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
And have a good one. Thanks for the call. All right. One more here before the next break. Then we'll check the email bag. It's Vox Pop. It's Gardening Today. 800-348-2551. We have a question from Susan in Schenectady. Hello, Susan.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Thank you very much. Okay, similar to a call a couple months back, I have a rabbit-eaten Mugo pine.
No.
It's not a deer. I have no deer. I'm in town here in Niskayuna, and it's fenced. The rabbit is quite hungry and has eaten almost all of the green needles off the Mugo, which I did not get planted in the fall.
Okay.
They're expensive. So I'm wondering, I'm not going to pitch this thing. I'm going to keep watering it and letting it go and nurture it. But is there hope?
There's definitely hope.
Yeah.
The biggest problem is when we see them, as we mentioned on that previous call or a couple of calls back, that when they eat the bark, it gets more dangerous. So this one is a plant that hasn't been in the ground for a while. So the question is going to be how much stored energy. It's going to need some stored energy to put new needles on. It has some of that built in. The question is just how much does it have? But I'm optimistic that I think, it'll come back to some capacity.
You got to cover it, wrap it, put some repellent on it, or pick it up and put it in a cold structure so the rabbits can't get it in a pot.
Got to keep the rabbits off it.
Yeah.
It's probably little buds, if not the terminal bud, on the end, if that's been eaten, that's not the end of the world.
There's probably
some little offshoots, little side buds just below that, and that's what you want to look for. You got to have some buds left, not just sticks.
Not just sticks.
The problem with evergreens, and the same thing with deer, is often they'll come back from it. But if it happens again in another year, then you really have issues.
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, couldn't it be deer? I mean, there are deer in this unit, and I've seen them jump from a stand over a fence.
No, Ray, honey.
No?
No, no. We had one in 50 years.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm surprised, because I live in this unit, and I got deer all over the place.
Well, in my house out there in the suburbs, too. Mercy sakes, it's like a game farm. All right, Susan, thanks a lot. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening, and the email bag is full. We'll check it in a minute. Sonny Rollins and Sunny Sphere here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, it's the gardening show, and what a rollicking time we are having today. We have an email bag that would rival Santa Claus at this time, so we'll get through as many as we can. This one is from Rick. Rick writes, I have recently been turned on to turmeric. I recently bought about a pound of the root. How can I plant it to grow more? I heard it grows sideways. Please elaborate.
Going to need a little help with that one.
I don't know that one.
Turmeric's a ginger. I could be wrong.
Got me swinging. I don't know.
Either way, it's not a perennial. You would grow it just for the summertime.
So Rick has stumped the band here?
Yeah.
Wow.
We don't have Dale Isla. We're missing her.
Oh, that's right. Hang on. Fred's looking something up. So anyway, boy, the Mets are having some trouble in the offseason, aren't they, Bob? Let's stall for time for a month. Yep. What do you got?
When I Googled it real quick here, AI tells me now this is AI.
All right. Fails.
So it's 100% accurate, right? Chris says, grow turmeric by planting 1 to 3 inch rhizome pieces with healthy buds, 2 to 4 inches deep in well-drained compost-rich soil. During early spring, it thrives in 70 to 90 degree, likes humidity, partial sun.
Yeah, so did you
consistent
hear
consistent moisture, and harvest 8 to 10 months later when leaves turn yellow and die
so
back.
So 70 degree soil temperatures it likes.
So like, not around here.
Ours almost never would get to 70
8 to 10
degrees.
Months, so that's a long
and
time around here.
So okay. It's a tropical plant that would be great to grow in Costa Rica.
Okay, so Rick could conceivably move to Costa Rica.
He could put it in a pot, and he could put a heat mat under it and put it in a bright room so the heat mat will keep it at 70, 72 degrees soil temperatures and grow it as a houseplant.
Okay. Yeah, and it doesn't say technically that it's 70 to 90 degree soil. It says it thrives in warm 70 to 90 degree Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Compost rich
air
soil.
Temperature.
So that could be air temperature.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think you'd have to be in some kind of desert to get to 70 to 90.
I think
so.
Soil temperatures.
I'm thinking
it's tropical. Lowland tropical.
But either way,
it's basically tropical.
Yes.
So,
okay. Sorry about that one, Rick. Here's one from Mary Lou, and Mary Lou says she's desperate for a solution. Hello, I would love to have some tips to eradicate stilt grass and jumping worms in and around my garden. And that's signed Desperate for a Solution.
So jumping worms, just to start with that one.
Okay.
It's not an easy thing to get rid of. If they're confirmed, and they are indeed.
You got to confirm
worms.
It. We say that every time. A lot of times you think they are and they're not.
And I've had people definitely bring me in bags with some worms in them. I always say, don't bring anything that's not sealed to the arboretum.
Yeah.
Show me. And I will say that I'd say over half of the times it's actually not a jumping worm.
Yeah. Interesting.
And they're easy to ID. Cornell University has a really great
a
website, and it tells you, you can see it. It's a pretty distinct band on the jumping worm.
But the grass, she's got it. I mean, you just got to keep going after it, right?
So if it's in your garden, you're dealing with this as a weed in your garden, you weed it just like any other weed, and that would be the most productive thing.
It's hard. I mean, you just keep going after it. Like any other weeds, I mean, if you don't weed a garden almost every week, you're going to get
something.
It,
some are harder to get rid of
than
others.
Growing like out in your, in your yard, and you're letting your yard be a little wild, that can be an issue because you're
just going to keep coming.
You're inviting it to grow, and so you would reduce it, and then you could try to cultivate it. You could smother it, etc. So it depends on where it is.
Yep. And if it is indeed confirmed jumping worm, then in that case, you're going to want to try to hand pick them out. And the way that I do it, when I've told people to deal with it, or dealt with it myself, is that you basically just pick them up and put them in an empty 5-gallon pail and just let them desiccate, dry out. And then after that, they're, you know, you can dispose of them.
Okay.
You know, other than, you know, so don't use them for fishing.
So they're cyclical. You know, they're annual little creatures. So there's only eggs right now.
Yep.
And those eggs will hatch out in June.
Okay.
That's right. There'll be these tiny little worms that you will barely be able to see until July.
Yep.
Sometime in August, they're big enough to really identify and breed, mate, you know.
Pop. Yep.
So by picking them in July and August, you're going to reduce the population.
Okay. Here's another one that is from somebody who is desperate. John is desperate for hedge advice. And then we'll go back to the phones.
Okay.
I need many yards of hedge for privacy in front of my house, and I have a hike deer problem. Are there any hedge shrubs that are fast-growing, deer-proof, or at least resistant, evergreen, and of course not too expensive? Am I searching for a unicorn?
Yeah.
And that is from John.
You know, when he said evergreen and deer resistant,
yeah, that's tough.
It's a little bit of a challenge.
The western would be less. Yeah, well, western arborvitae has been reasonably deer resistant.
It is, through duplicata.
And it grows fast, and it's evergreen, and it tolerates some shade as well. So it has become the go-to shade, you know, quick-growing evergreen. It's not perfect. Deer will eat it if there's a lot of deer pressure.
Yep.
They still will eat it.
But it is a lot better than your standard eastern arborvitae. Way better.
You know, another
eastern arborvitae, just not. Don't even think about it.
Yeah, worse. One of the top.
You know, non-evergreen plants would also work really well. As I said, there's lots of flowering shrubs that get
lots
big
of things
that would do a great job of screening, although you might be able to see through them in the winter.
People use hydrangeas, Rosa Sharon's, privets.
Yep. Lots of viburnums
Viburnums.
Yep. We've used lilac at our house.
Lilac.
Yep, which a lot of people are like, wow, you know, what is that hedge?
Yeah.
And because it just, you don't see it that commonly used, but it works well.
All right, let's go to Dave in East Greenbush. Dave, you're on.
Hey, this is Dave. I have some handsome apple trees, some adorable pear trees, and the past couple of years we have been suffering from blight. The pears have also been growing some lovely worms, and I need to spray them. I don't know what to spray them with or when to spray them, and these trees are guarded by some lovely dogs. So whatever I spray has got to be safe around the pet.
Okay.
What do you got?
Yeah, so first of all, I think I would recommend going to one or more of the extension services because they will have some literature that will give you a nice spray program. In other words, Cornell.
It's not a one and done on this. Yep.
UMass. You'll be able to find the sort of these steps, but basically you're applying a dormant application of horticultural oil in the spring. Pretty benign. Wouldn't want to, you know, make my dogs drink it by any means. It's usually paraffinic oil. So, you know, you could use a vegetable-based oil as well. But once it's done, once you've put it on the trees, it's not going to bother the pets at all.
Yep.
You then usually follow up after the flowers drop, okay, so post-petal fall, usually late May or June, with some other more traditional insecticide-fungicide combination. And there are lots of organic solutions there that you could use. And
the fungicides are usually sulfur or copper based in terms of the organic ones. There are non-organic ones, but those would be the most commonly found.
And you got to do it before the leaves are the size of a mouse's ear, I was taught by
Once you have the fungus and the disease, it's too late. You got to do it before.
Okay.
Yeah, and so the only other fungal issue is really a bacterial issue is this thing called fire blight, which we had a bit of last year because
I saw a lot of that on the pears last year.
And that is something that you will have to apply as a preventative as well. So identifying what you had as a blight would be the first step, I think.
Yeah, right, when you say blight, you know, are we talking more like apple scab, lots of spots, a lot of leaves with spots, a lot of those leaves falling off? And if that's the case, that's not really a blight, and that's easier to control. Blight, like fire blight, is more severe.
Now, I don't want you guys to do prices, you nursery guys. We don't do that in public radio, but you mentioned copper as one of the things you can put down to protect against this. Copper is pretty expensive these days. Is that expensive stuff?
It's copper sulfate.
But it's copper. It's copper, right? There's some copper in there.
It's not. No,
you're not going to take it to the salvage yard.
You couldn't make a penny out of it.
No,
I know that. But copper itself is there's some
copper's up right now. Yeah, copper prices.
Haven't noticed a price change in that. at the moment.
You guys,
it's not an issue.
The penny's going. The penny's out. Cost too much to make them.
So can you put pennies in the ground? Would that work?
I don't think it would.
All right, let's just move on. Look,
it would have been cost effective.
People can't see the look we're giving right now.
I didn't get much sleep last night. I've had enough. Let's just go to the phones. Nancy and Troy. Nancy, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm hoping you can help me. I have an azalea plant. It's in a pot. I got it in December. It actually was from my mom's funeral, and I'm either overwatering it or underwatering it because all the leaves look very dry and they're falling off like it's in protest. And I'm wondering if you can help me save it.
Are they falling off yellow or brown?
Brown.
Yeah, brown might mean either that it got too wet and has stayed too wet. You also could check that soil. If the soil is always moist, it never feels light and dry before you water it again, then that is usually... causes a root rot, which would make the leaves drop. But it could be something else.
My experience with potted azaleas like that is they're almost in a full peat moss mixture, which gets dry. And when it gets dry, you cannot get it wet without soaking it. So I would get it out of the pot, see what that soil looks like. But I'd almost guess that it got dry, even though you were watering it. And if you don't put it in water and standing water, you can't get it wet. But I would do that and try to rehydrate it. But look at the soil first.
Yep, and even if you get a piece of that, if you did lose part of it or most of it, even if you got a little piece of that to live, you could either take a cutting from that and reproduce it again, or with patience, train that to become a better plant. I've seen plants that a lot of people gave up on. When a little bit of patience and a little bit of knowledge, you can turn them around.
Nancy, so, you want to follow up?
Yes. Yeah, so get it out of the pot, and do I need to, like, consider getting a special soil for it?
See what the roots look like. That's the first thing.
Yeah, just see if it's sopping wet in there or if it's dry. What you want to do is keep it warm and put it in the sunniest window you have, warm, sunny window. And so what you're going to need, obviously, is some new growth coming off of the stems.
It could come back.
It could come back. Yeah, a little bit of growth early on will turn into a lot of growth later with the right care.
Okay, Nancy, thanks for the call. Now to Warwick, and it's Peter's turn. Hello, Peter.
Hey, guys. Question I have for you has to do with hydroponic, aeroponic, or traditional soil gardening. Which produces the best flavor in vegetables?
Sounds like a restaurateur.
Yep. I mean, it's a good question there. I will say that certain veggies tend to do better in some of those different cases. So like hydroponics, tomatoes work really, really well.
The flavor.
Flavor-wise.
It's going to be more dependent on the variety and the seed than I think than the growth.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's more the genetic of the plant.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what you're feeding it is playing a role. But I think most of that flavor is, geared up in genetics. Like the variety is key. Then some are just going to not do as well in hydroponic situations. Other plants are going to do better in soil.
It's a lot easier to grow stuff in soil. It's more forgiving
because
you've got so many different micronutrients and materials in the soil.
It's also more forgiving.
If you're hydroponic or you're in pots, everything it gets is what you give it, and it doesn't get anything else.
Yeah.
Yep. Whereas when we do gardening, I tend to want to do very much based on organic soils. And it's been a lot less work. It really has. I mean, if you get good compost, we almost never even need to fertilize our garden. We just top dress it with compost. So I think you'd be better, unless you really wanted to set up a hydroponic system, in which case productivity is sometimes the reason why people go hydroponics. You can sometimes produce bigger yields, faster turnarounds.
You almost need a greenhouse when you do that.
But you almost need a greenhouse condition for that, right?
I mean, the hydroponic stuff you buy in the store is
all indoor,
either under tremendous light,
light,
or greenhouse.
Yep.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. I mean, you guys remember a few years back, maybe 10 years, I don't know, 15, time is sort of elastic now at my age, but there was a time when you could see on TV these ads for these tomato plants that hung upside down.
Yeah, they do that.
I think they're hydroponic plants.
I think they were.
And I always wanted to try it, but I never had the ambition to actually go.
There was a Mass Mocha, I think, years ago.
Really?
And they actually had trees and containers growing upside down.
Whole trees.
Yeah, trees, actually large woody plants, and they were part of an experiment. I think it was mass movement.
I felt like that was a bit of a torture chamber for those trees.
I kind of agree with you. I don't like to manipulate things that in that kind of way.
You know, but, why make life harder?
Right. But, you know, I think it was an art.
It's all for the art. Come
I think
on.
It was an art thing. You know, at Longwood Gardens, they have this awesome
like
square.
Bonsai,
they have really square trees that they prune in some of these gardens, like Longwood Gardens. Geometry, I think.
They also have people they pay to take care of all this stuff.
But they do. So, you know, I always say, do what's easier.
Easy.
But back to hydroponics really quickly. SUNY Cobleskill College, they have a crazy great really good hydroponic system there. Hmm. And if you contacted the college, I'm pretty sure they'd probably give you a lot of real good insight.
Okay.
If you wanted more info on that, you'd probably even get a tour.
All right, let's grab a couple of more calls here before we wrap it up. Fatima is in Half Moon. Hello, Fatima, you're up.
Hi, how are you guys? I had a question about hydrangeas. I recently moved into a house over the summer, and they have a bunch of hydrangeas. I'm not sure what to do. I read that it's best before the end of winter to trim them, but I didn't know if there was only specific ones you're supposed to trim and not the rest.
Yes, you're correct. There are some could use some trimming, and some you don't want to trim, and so it's best to know which ones they are. Can you describe how they looked in flower last year?
What color?
There's one that's kind of like a cone shape.
Great.
And then there's ones that are like bulbs, like circle ones.
Yeah.
So those are the two main ones that we have.
And then were the circle ones white and pink, are they?
Yes, they're white, and then there's pink ones too.
Yeah, okay.
And the circle ones were also white. They weren't blue or dark pink.
Yes, the circle ones are white.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and the cone ones are like a whitish and a pinkish hue.
And the cone ones are very stiff and woody right now.
Yes.
Yeah. So those ones you can prune now or this spring before they leaf out, primarily to kind of clean them up and remove some of the older flowers, and or to reduce them and make them a little smaller so that they don't get any bigger, because they're going to grow a couple of feet every summer and then bloom July, August.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you can't hurt those. You can don't be afraid of trimming them. You don't have to if you don't want to, but don't be afraid of it if you want to reduce them.
So we call those.
So it doesn't matter how much I trim them.
You know, 25% off of the surrounding top and sides is usually plenty. Those are the panicle ones.
Okay.
The round ones, if they're white, are probably the ones called arborescence, and those you don't have to do anything to, or you can cut them down. And you can actually even remove them to the ground. But we do want to make sure the white ones, because if they're the blue, pink, purple ones, then you'd want to do nothing to them.
Okay, thank you for that one. One more call here, and then we're going to have to wrap it. And I'm sorry, there are a lot of people who've been waiting a long time, and thankfully the gardeners will be back again and again this season, and hopefully you can get your question in. Cheryl in Lake George, you got to make it very quick, Cheryl.
Sure. Toilet paper, inside cardboard circle things, and also egg cartons. Are they okay to start seedlings in?
Sure. I mean, egg cartons have been, I know, used for years and years. You know, the only issue with those is that the good part is that they biodegrade. The bad part about them is that they can dry out sometimes too much. And a plastic container, which, you can reuse over and over and over and over, it makes it a little bit easier to maybe to conserve water in.
Right.
But I've definitely done them in egg cartons over the years, and it certainly works.
Okay, Cheryl, thanks a lot. By the way, Susie from Aiken, South Carolina, checked in, said, I grow turmeric down in South Carolina. It grows straight up, pretty flowers, not too much sun, comes back every year. So who knew?
South Carolina.
Yeah.
That's not here.
That's true. Susie's in South Carolina.
The ground doesn't freeze.
But everything can be grown as an annual.
They do have a frost, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, she's doing well.
Yeah,
she's doing pretty good,
All right, so if we want to find out about Fatigan's Nursery, maybe stop in. Bob, how do we do that?
We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, near the road that goes to the airport. It's 1140 Troy Schenectady Road.
Yeah, that's very professional. 1140, I like that. You're a pro. Greg, how about you? And do it in your deep voice.
I'm taking after you, Ray. I've learned a lot.
Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, wardsnursery.com. And grow your turmeric in a pot. Put them outside for the summer. bring them back in.
Fellas, yeah. Is it turmeric or turmeric?
Turmeric.
Turmeric.
Hey, there's an R in there.
Tomato, tomato.
Turmeric.
Let's call the whole thing off. Hey, Fred, if people want to contact you at the Landis Arboretum,
yep.
How do you do it?
It's 174 Lake Road, Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
All right, thank you very much. Support comes from Mountain Laurel Waldorf School, New Paltz, focused on providing inspired learning for engaged students, now enrolling parent-child through eighth grade. Early bird registration open until March 1st for summer program, mountainlaurel.org. Well, thanks again to Fred and Bob and Greg for being here. Thank you for listening, and sorry if we didn't get to your call. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Zach Malloy's our engineer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Cocktails with John Fisher. We'll see you then.